Greetings and welcome to Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we've saved the best. Well, we've allowed Hammond to go last. For you got to listen to this.
It feels like elementary kickball all over again.
Right. You're picked last for you got to listen to this. Poor Hammond. Really, this isn't the last you got to listen to this, because I think this is it's a fun format for a show. And whenever we need to fill some between season weeks, I think you got to listen. This is a great type of show. Mm-hmm. But like I said, we have saved you for last, and it is
out of fear.
Out of fear, I really was thinking you were going to make me listen to a Dream Theater song. In other words, a Dream Theater album.
Well,
I kind of did. You know what? Yeah, you did it without doing it.
Yeah, I did it without doing it.
So tell us who and what you've made me listen to.
I picked the Fates Warning album, A Pleasant Shade of Gray. What's interesting about the Fates Warning album, A Pleasant Shade of Gray, is it's really one song split into 12 different sections.
Yeah. I hope you did air quotes when you said album. And what's funny is if you look at the expanded edition, it's like even more than one song split into 12 parts. It's like one song split into 12 parts, first done studio, then done live, and then done instrumental acoustic demo. And here's the frustrating thing about this. Well, I kind of like it and I kind of don't like it. No song titles except for part one, part two, part three.
Yes.
Which makes it really hard for me to say, oh, I really like part four.
Yes. Yeah, that is a hard thing to do because it's not broken up into the typical the suite names. Part one is the entrance and part two is the darkened doorway. It's just all Pleasant Shade of Gray.
That said, I liked this a lot. I'm not even going to say I liked this a lot more than I expected. I'm going to say I liked this a lot. I listened to it a few weeks ago and then brought it back today in preparation for recording. And kind of coming back to some of those themes and kind of the through line music that basically ties everything together. I really enjoyed it. And here's, I'm going to throw out a comparison. And it's not going to be a prog rock comparison. Live's first album, the band Live, and their first album, Mental Jewelry, which, by the way, was produced by Jerry Harrison of the Talking Heads.
What year did that come out?
1991.
Okay, wow. So this came out in 97. So the reason this album came on my radar, a couple things happened. I had already been a fan of Dream Theater. I'd already been a fan of prog music and prog metal in particular. But in 96, Dream Theater released Falling Into Infinity, and then Liquid Tension was released. And it's got John Petrucci, Mike Portnoy, Jordan Rudess, and Tony Levin on playing bass on it. Okay. And I had this dawning of interest in progressive rock. And so I kind of went on this quest, and I was sampling everything in the progressive world. And in 97, when this album came out, they were talking a lot about how Falling Into Infinity wasn't that solid of an album, but this really was. And the tie is that the keyboard player on this album, Kevin Moore, had been playing keyboards for Dream Theater up until Falling Into Infinity. I bought the album. I instantly loved it because it's basically, it's set up like a musical because it's got like four or five themes. They're repeated. melody lines come back in different ways. It really is just one giant piece of music. It's basically a classical piece of music that's done on electric instruments.
Yeah, you know, I think that might scare people off. I mean, I think that it's much more rock minded than a classical piece of music. Rock instruments. I mean, it is a rock album, and it feels like a rock opera concept album. I wasn't able to pick up a story, but I imagine if I listened to it a couple more times or read lyrics, then I'd probably get the story of it. But
it's more about atmosphere and that kind of malaise that falls on a winter's day, on a rainy winter's day.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, here's an amazing thing. This is because I did some looking up when we were talking about this and said, all right, well, let me find out a little bit more about Fate's Warning. These guys are considered one of the big three. So you get your Dream Theater. Boy, people are going to get drunk listening to this episode. You got your Dream Theater, you got your Queensryche, and you got these guys. And it's for a band I've never heard of. I've never heard of Fate's Warning before you had me listen to this, but to have them immediately put up in the echelon of Queensryche and Dream Theater that's huge. And for it to be like, oh yeah, these are the big three. It's like saying, oh yeah, the big three podcasters out there are Mark Maron, Adam Curry, and Brian Ibbett. No one would ever say that, but actually, if I ever heard that,
I've seen the book that does, well, Brian.
Yeah, really? Well, it's probably one I've written. I think you're thinking of Podcasting for Dummies, which in my case was Podcasting by Dummies is what it, but no, I mean, that's crazy. It's like saying, oh yeah, the greatest movies of all time, Gone with the Wind, Casablanca, and then some great indie movie that you've never heard of, but is like, wow, to be compared to those other two, that's really, really cool. Is Fate's Warning, is it just that I'm out of the prog loop and I haven't heard of these guys? Is Fate's Warning like really well known I imagine they are definitely well known in prog circles, right?
Oh, yeah. In fact, on our 1984 episode, I picked an early Fate's Warning song in our 1984 song list that we picked.
Gotcha. Okay.
No, they're very well respected. They're incredible musicians. I have enjoyed them for ages, and I'm actually really surprised. I'm very happy that you like these guys because it's a different style than Queensryche and Dream Theater.
It is. It is and it isn't. I mean, it's, you're right. I'd say it's probably if you're drawing a line and one of the endpoints is Queensryche and the other endpoint is Dream Theater, I feel like these guys would be closer to the Queensryche side of things, but it would almost be like an angle with one of the other vertexes being live or, just trying to think of who else these guys remind me of. Maybe, Stone Temple, not Stone Temple Pilots, Alice in Chains, maybe.
Yeah, there's some definite contemporary influences that the other, like Queensryche was influenced by hair metal. Mm-hmm. Dream Theater has been influenced by Metallica and the Beatles and far more aggressive. And then you throw in the proggy side of it, like, you know, Genesis and Yes. And so it gets really technical. These guys kind of fall into this almost kind of, I don't want to call it industrial, but it definitely has other current influences that the other guys don't have.
Yeah, I can see that. And good. Then I feel justified in my comparison.
Yeah.
For sure.
It is interesting, though, that Queensryche came out with Operation Mindcrime, which is listed as one of the greatest concept albums of all time. And it was early. And then this came out in 97. And it's listed as one of the greatest concept albums. And then Dream Theater is actually the last of the three to come out with their seminal concept album, which was Scenes from Memory, Metropolis 2000. And that came out in 99.
Very cool. So what do you want to do? Do you want to do kind of a standout tracks kind of thing? Again, you know, with these things being part one, part two, part three, it's a little bit tougher, but I don't know. There are some pop sensibilities in here that I really like, especially part two.
Since you're new to the party, why don't you lead it? And I will drop in things and then add things as we go, because you are definitely the audience in this one.
Okay. Well, then I definitely want to start. I mean, I do like part one. I like this kind of instrumental lead in. You know what it reminded me of? It's really silly. And maybe it's just because I was there a couple weeks ago. But the music that's playing in Disneyland's Haunted Mansion as you're getting ready to get onto one of the buggies.
Okay.
There's like a foreboding organ. I don't know, a really, really cool kind of foreboding organ sound that I think comes through in that I really like.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I thought about when I was listening to it this time around was that the people who wrote Repo, the Genetic Opera,
had
to have been familiar with this album.
Sure. No, that totally makes sense. All right, kind of continuing through, because I do, the first three or four songs I feel like are have a great, not just through line, but a great kind of a sensibility to them. Part two does feel like this would be the first single released from the album.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the most Queensryche of the of the whole album. This is probably the most, like, if you're a Queensryche fan, you get in early on this thing and be like, all right, I'm totally into this. And then you're kind of enveloped in the rest of the album after you've kind of sunk your teeth into it. That's kind of a lot of metaphors all kind of jammed into one.
The thing I appreciated with this is the first time, so I listened to it three times in preparation for this episode.
Okay.
And the first time was one of those, put headphones on, sit, close your eyes, and just let it kind of overtake you.
Yeah.
And that is definitely the way to do this.
Yeah, I listened to this. I listened to this at my desk a couple times, but listening to it in the car, and I think it's that car experience where nobody else in the car with you, crank it up, mm-hmm. and you get the almost the surround sound experience. Mm-hmm. I think headphones probably would be even better. That's what it is for me. It's that car experience. I wish I could listen to all my music in the car, but I wish every time I listen to an album, I could listen to it in the car with that, you know, that undisturbed experience.
Unless it's disturbed and then you want to be disturbed.
Yes. Then I'll have that undisturbed, disturbed experience.
And you can fully get down with the sickness.
You know what I'm saying though? I mean, it's almost like a studio in mm-hmm. there. I guess if you've got a really decent set of speakers, which I don't even think I've really got a great stereo system in my car, but it's that enclosed audio bouncing off the walls, you know, speaker in the front center, couple on the sides on each side, and kind of that surround. And I really, really like that. Maybe I'm going to get the bass that I'd get if I was listening at home or listening with headphones. But
and this is an album that's really dense. There's a ton of layers in it. That headphone experience or that good speaker experience is needed to mm-hmm. kind of to feel how dense and layered this album really is.
Sure. Sure. Makes sense. Three gets into that, you know, if two is the most Queensryche, then I'd say three is the most Alice in Chains-y, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like uh-huh. it goes, that is your prog grunge. Is there a thing, prog grunge? There should be.
Yeah. If not, there is now.
There is now prog grunge, very, very grungy prog sound. Four is your ballad.
Yes, very much so. And it's interesting how if you listen to it in one sitting, you don't feel like you're getting separate songs. But as I have learned over the course of time, you put this on your phone, you put your phone on shuffle, and they pop up, and they work just fine as individual songs.
They do. You know, one of the ways I was listening to it, and I think it was in the car via Apple music, there was a little tiny bit of a gap between tracks, which kind of bums me out because sometimes a track begins with the ending ding from the previous track. And I don't like that. I don't like hearing like a little gap and then having to go to the next thing. I don't know, if I were importing this, I think I might do that thing where you can import it all as one track. But boy, if it came up in shuffle, you'd be like, you either want to listen to 54 minutes of music or you don't.
Yeah. Well, I've got a mix of, so Dream Theater did a series of songs called the 12-step suite. And it's about Mike Portnoy's journey through alcoholism and addiction that kind of thing. And it spread over the course of a few albums. Well, someone got together, mixed it together. So it's an hour long piece of music mixed as the 12-step suite. I have it on my phone. I have actually never sat and listened to the whole thing on my phone because it's an hour. It's 60 minutes. And in that time, I'd rather listen to two other Dream Theater songs than.
Yeah. I can kind of see that. So I'll have to give it a shot and just kind of intermix a few of these.
Was that Sparks? The Sparks 1 hour song?
Oh, it's the director.
Lloyd Kaufman.
No.
The palette of Lloyd Kaufman.
Oh, Cena, why are you doing this to me? Why are you Scott Johnsoning me in my memory here? It is the, right.
Ingmar Bergman.
The many loves of Martin Scorsese.
Ingmar Bergman?
Ingrid Bergman. Ingmar, the seduction of Ingmar Bergman.
Okay.
That's the one that's like that, right. It was a radio musical. You know, that's a good comparison. This is maybe not in style, but very much in substance, a very...
It's form factor.
Comparable.
Its form factor is the same.
For sure. Yeah. I really liked it. Kind of continuing through, I don't have any notes on anything five or later, but I mean, five does kind of, it's part two. I mean, it's part two of part two. It basically is the same chorus and melody of part two, but with a little less arrangement behind it.
And then the last track run clocks in like 9 minutes, and it's weird that the epic has an epic.
Yeah, right. That's funny. Yeah. Part 12. Oh yeah. No, this is the one that kind of, in the words of the Big Lebowski, kind of brings the room together, right? It ties all those previous parts together.
Yeah. It takes all the previous themes, all the kind of previous moods, and kind of ties them all up in a bow almost. It's kind of like the story's being wrapped up or the rainstorm's coming to an end.
Right. Yeah, no, that was, I do remember liking that one. I remember, cause you know, I had it on replay. So this one played last and then it automatically went back to part one again. And, it was almost indistinguishable. The wrapping around of the music. But,
so which movie would this sync up to, like, Dark Side of the Moon
Wizard of Oz? It'd be interesting to watch like an old sci-fi movie to this, like Metropolis is the first thing that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that's the first thing that comes to mind, but it does.
I was thinking, it's funny you said that. I was actually thinking Caligari or Nosferatu.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. That's that's funny.
I think my favorite part of the and I can't remember the number because really it all talking about things bleeding together. The one where it starts out with the keyboard going deedly 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 deedly, which
the Rush song basically.
Yes, basically. But you know which one I'm talking about, right?
I do, yes. That was later in the, like, three or four, or, I mean, sorry, eight, nine, or ten, or something.
Yeah, I really like that part, like the way it starts.
There it is. It is eight. Yeah. It is Rush, yeah. I was thinking that there.
But I think that's the other thing that I like about this is because the influences are clearly on their sleeves, but they're also not so clearly on their sleeves either, because we could draw lines between contemporary bands of 1997 all the way back through to, you know, early Yes and early Genesis and... It's a lot of conversation to be had about, okay, so these pieces were pulled from these kind of inspirations, and you and I might have two very different sets of inspiration.
Totally. And is it those influences that are almost meshed to where, all right, it's not a straight Rush influence because there's some Alice in Chains. It's like Alice in Chains and Rush. Mm-hmm. Or is it the Queensryche with a little bit of Dream Theater in it? You know, it's kind of pull from something I said earlier. If you draw a line from those two points, the influences are comboed. So it's not like this is their Rush song. This is their, even though I began the show by saying, this is their Queensryche song. This is their Alice in Chains song. But it isn't a straight, you know, a straight one-to-one kind of thing.
No, and I think that's the thing that kind of is enjoyable about having this to re-listen to over and over is because each time I get different things. Like, I never would have pulled from Repo back when I first listened to this album because Repo didn't exist. Mm-hmm. But now when I listened to it this morning, I kept hearing... Oh, yeah, Repo definitely had to have listened to this before they started doing things, or at least were more than passingly familiar with it.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good. Now, did I read in the notes that basically the members that put this together reunited for, where is it? They reunited for another later Fates Warning album that kind of basically was the same lineup as this one.
Yes. Yeah. The Fates Warning has had a little bit of a revolving door, but it's mostly been Matthäus and... Zonder. No, I'm sorry. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's been the three main guys, Matthäus, Ray Adler, and Mark Zonder are the three main guys. And then they brought in Joey Vera to play bass, and Vera has played with all kinds of people, including like Armored Saint. And he's a real metal, bass player. And then you have, Kevin Moore, who just been let go. He just actually quit, Dream Theater right before this came out.
Gotcha. By the way, you know the funk kind of world music funk artist named Keb Mo?
Yes. Uh huh. Yeah, I love Keb Mo.
His real name is Kevin Moore.
Uh huh.
glad we don't confuse those two.
No, because that, and it's weird though, because Kevin Moore went on to have a very electronic, electronica ambient career.
Oh, really? Has he played with anybody else that I know?
He started a project called OSI, which has actually members of Fates Warning in it, and Dream Theater for a couple albums. But then he did this project called Chroma Key that was all him. And it was very atmospheric, kind of very, I don't know, self-realization kind of ambient prog electronica stuff. And I really, really liked the first couple albums he did doing that. Each time I walk out the door, someone mixes
is metaphor. Life is so much cleaner on the page.
Then he started doing some soundtracks and he got a little too out there in the woods. So I haven't heard much from him lately, but I enjoy Kevin as a musician.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I liked him on this.
Yeah, he, in fact, one of the, when he released Dead Air for Radios, his first album after leaving Dream Theater, I sent an email to him saying, hey, I just got this. I just finished listening to it. I really, really like it. Nice work. And he responded with, well, you're my first. I got the CD and I loved it email. So I thought I'd respond to you.
Oh, that's so cool.
And this was back in like 96. No, it was like 98, I think, is when it came out.
Okay.
99. And so it was early in my, you know, record collecting, early in my email kind of career. And I was like, oh, look at that. Look at me reaching out and actually look at the internet doing what it's supposed to do.
That's so cool. Yeah, no kidding. Exactly. And way cool to like reach out to an artist, musician that you like, and then hear back from him. I forgot to mention, and we can keep this in because I think it's poignant, but I heard back from the drummer of Figures on a Beach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, who, let's see, let me pull it up here. Where is it? Here we go. Smit E. Smitty, who said, thank you very much for featuring our debut Sire record, Standing on Ceremony. I'm currently playing in two bands now. I play drums in Little Billy Lost with the ex-guitar player of the Atlantics, Fred Pino, as well as fronting my own band, Smit E. Smitty. He said, you know, thank you so very much. All the best, Smitty. I need to reply back to him because I think that's just so damn cool. Like, to hear from an artist that we feature on Soundography that, you know, especially that you got to listen to this because that is the equivalent of, oh man, here's this thing that nobody knows about. And I just would love for you guys to hear it and blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. And then to hear back from that artist. Is just so cool. That's, so I totally get that.
That's great.
So we need to reply back to Smitty Smitty.
Yeah. I'm glad that I'm glad he enjoyed it. I'm glad that I didn't say anything too horrible.
Right, exactly. I'm glad he didn't write back and say, oh, you guys got it all wrong. Can I talk with you guys to clear things up? And it's funny because Rodney Anonymous, who I'm referring to, he was so nice in that follow-up call that it made me feel like, all right. He wasn't like, oh, you guys are idiots. It was like, all right, well, here's a couple things. Number one, we had nothing to do with that damn punk rock girl song. Glad you like it, but I had nothing to do with it. And then clearing some of the other things up.
Yeah,
but
no, that was
cool. Anyway.
No, this is, I think that's the benefit of this kind of thing is because it's you and I and mm-hmm. whoever else is on, they're learning about or sharing their stuff. And then if we get to hear back from the people we shared, then that's really cool.
Yeah, it totally is.
I really don't think Third Eye Blind will reach out to us.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I want to be turned around on them. You know who turned me around a little bit was Train recently. I didn't see them when they were at BlizzCon performing a couple weeks ago, but I don't know. There've been a couple songs that's making me feel like, all right, I know what you guys' place is. It's not, you know, you don't want to be the next Goo Goo Dolls. You want to be somewhere between Goo Goo Dolls and
obscurity.
Not obscurity. No, but like some like a pop artist that is more just like all about fun. Almost like a Weird Al Yankovic, but not without the parody, but with that element of fun.
How about fun, period?
No, fun period isn't fun. You know, that's got to be the most poorly named band of all time because I like them, but they're not fun. And that's probably why it's fun, period, all lowercase. Because it's like, we're ironic because we're not fun. But anyway, but I think that's where Train is falling. And it's, if I look at them in that frame of mind, it's like, all right, I kind of like these guys. But if you look at them as like the Hey Soul Sister, it's just another, it's Iris all over again by the Goo Goo Dolls, then yeah, it's going to be like, all right, brush them off there. You know, we've seen all we need to see from these guys, and it's going to be more of the same.
Yeah. So on a scale of 1 to 10, Brian.
Sure.
Where does this stick you in your willingness to dive into more prog, not next season, but the season after?
So 10 being definitely we got to do some more prog, uh-huh, or 1, I never want to hear another, uh-huh, another prog album again.
Yeah.
I don't know, like 7 or 8, because not only, I mean, I you know, I'm not against prog. And,
no,
and,
I know.
And we I feel like we have hit a lot of prog in the last few seasons of the show. I kind of want to listen to more Fate's Warning. I know they put out a lot of stuff. How does the rest of their stuff compare to this? Is it as accessible? Yes. Or is it?
Mm-hmm. They're actually a good entry point, I think. There's an album they put out a few years ago that's only got a couple songs on it. That's a little bit hard. It's more like an EP.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's like, oh, we're going from an album that has one 12-piece song on it to, you know, they put out another album that's only got a couple songs. No, I was like, okay, wow, they split them into two now.
it's more like two long songs on an EP. So gotcha, instead of having like 4 on an EP, it's 2 longer songs on an EP. I really enjoyed that. Their early stuff, their first album, they're definitely finding their way. I really have enjoyed their two. The two that they talk about right before this, Symmetry and Parallels, are fantastic albums.
Okay.
So.
All right. Yeah, I'm interested. I definitely want to hear some more and from these guys. And I don't think we'll end up doing a Fate's Warning episode of Soundography, but I might have to check out more. Maybe I'll let you recommend a second album to listen to from these guys and see where I go from there. You know, you could even do that. You want to do that right now? Is it? Am I putting you on the spot?
No, I think actually going back to Parallels is actually a great
Parallels. Okay,
is a great place to go if this hour of music is got you wanting to learn more, then step back one album to Parallels and you'll start there.
Cool. All right, we'll do. And that the reason I put you on the spot with that is because I think other listeners who listen to this are like, all right, yeah, I'll listen to some more Fate's Warning. Mm-hmm. They're all saying, Brian, how come you've never heard of Fate's Warning? We all know Fate's Warning. We got t-shirts and bumper stickers and postcards from the band. So what's the matter with you? Very cool.
Just a couple pieces of business. I did add the new Patreon level.
Oh, good.
To the Patreon, which is basically having a listener introduce us to an album for a You Gotta Listen to This type of episode.
Great. I love it.
Same format, come in at the beginning, and then you and I will talk about it as the other guest-sponsored episodes.
So, nice.
But yeah, cool. It's there. And
which is good, because we've had a lot of people who say, hey, I love the format of You Gotta Listen to This. Are you only doing shows with your friends and in the podcasting world, and now we can say no, we'll do it with our acquaintances in the podcasting world.
We sure will. And I've got some names to throw at you for the next season break for You Gotta Listen to This. Since we've kind of beaten the Frog Pants community up, I've got a few names.
All right, cool. Well, don't say them here, because when I say no, those people will be really hurt.
Why do you think I didn't say anything?
Yeah, thanks.
I'm saving us both the embarrassment.
Take that, Gary from Lantronics. No, I'm kidding. I only say that because I know he listens to the show and I know
Joey Image.
Joey Image, right, exactly. I know these people really get a kick out of us saying that. All right, cool. Well, very good. I guess what the next cool thing to say is that the very next episode you get of this show will be the next season of Soundography. And I've been doing this where I've been trying to remember, are we on season, this will be season four we're starting,
no,
right?
No, it'll be season five.
That's why, okay, that's why I'm asking, because, man, we're already up to season five.
Yep.
We've outlasted the original series of Star Trek. What else? What else has never made it to a season
five? Let's see.
We'll beat Community next year.
Yes. Yeah. And frankly, I think Lost and Breaking Bad to beat. And I still think we're funnier than the last couple seasons of Community.
Oh, shut up. Well, maybe. Yeah. The non-Mark Harmon season.
Yes.
Yeah. Which was four, I want to say. Then he came back for five, and then they did that Yahoo only. Remember when Yahoo Video was a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I think that, like, we'll never be as funny as season one of Community, but season three and four, I think we've been there.
It's hard for me to compare, but okay, sure.
Like the last season of The Office, we're funnier than they are.
Well, yeah. Didn't everybody in the last season of The Office find out that they'd been stuck on the island and it was a flash? Oh, no, it was a different thing. But anyway, well, cool. Well, all right. So season five of Soundography, you'll be getting the next episode, the first episode of the next season, as the very next episode of this that you hear. And I'm excited for this new season. We've got a few patrons who've already given us the task of doing some of their episodes. And we're going to be integrating a few of our choices in there as well. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So that is what's next. Hammond, anything else to say before we wrap this up?
Just think, at least there wasn't 50 tracks on this.
Oh, geez. Well, I mean,
because it would have been 50 shades of gray.
Oh, 50 shades of 50 pleasant shades of gray.
And that's something you could never say about those films. They are not pleasant.
No, they're not pleasant. No, the other thing, actually, what really they might be getting is the next episode is the episode we do for Coverthon, which is happening the day, as always, the day after Thanksgiving. This episode is going to go up Monday, the 19th. So this coming Friday is Coverthon. In addition to 17 other hours of programming, you and I are going to be taking on an hour and doing a Soundography episode, talking about girl groups of the 60s. So your Chiffons, your Shirelles, your Supremes, your Ronettes, all those great, great groups of the 60s. I'm excited for that show because I love that genre. I love that style. Yeah. So it'll be fun to talk
about.
Oh, and
hey, and as we're doing follow-ups from stuff, Spice Girls have announced a new tour.
Oh, that's right. And it's only in the UK. So one of our Patreon levels is if you're a UK listener, it's
provide housing for Brian.
Right. Housing for Brian. And and I will go to the Spice Girls concert with you. Yeah, we need to make that happen. No, you know what? I'm not going to say that I haven't considered a UK trip just for this, but I have a feeling that if they do well in the UK, they're going to announce maybe like a Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Miami, New York tour or something like that. Yeah. You know, like 4 or 5 stop tour in the US. I hope so.
Yeah. For your sake, for your sake, I hope so too.
I know, for my budget's sake. Can I say that I'm not at all disappointed that that Victoria Beckham is not going to be part of this.
No, because when we did the thing, she proved to be kind of
she was the least spicy of the Spice Girls.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Okay. On that note, I guess it's a great way to wrap it up. If you want to get in touch with us, we love hearing from you. We love getting your feedback, your ideas, your suggestions, your thoughts on the show. Email us at thesoundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at thesoundography. Our website, if you haven't been able to guess by now, it is soundography.com. And of course, there you'll find links for this episode where you can link directly to the Spotify playlist for A Pleasant Shade of Gray by Fate's Warning. You can find a link to Amazon to buy the album. And you can also find a link to support the show on Patreon. If all those things we were talking about, all those exclusives, all those ways of showing us your love, sound good to you, then Patreon is the way to go. I've got packages ready to go out with our current set of goodies. So if you're waiting on that, you won't have to wait much longer. Thanks to Tina for putting those together. She is the best. She's the best intern, unpaid intern that a guy could marry. If you want to leave us reviews, you could go to iTunes and leave them there, or any of the other places where you get your podcast, Stitcher or Spreaker or anything like that. I think that's it.
I think it is. Stay tuned for the other thing Brian is working on.
You and I are working on. You mean America's Next Top Podcasting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yes. And you're working on it as the face. I'm the Roz Doyle of it.
You're only if Roz Doyle basically did all the psychotherapy for Fraser Crane. Because you are doing so much for the show. I don't ever want you to discount the amount of work you're putting into this thing to make it happen. I'm excited for that. But that is coming up. Stay tuned for more information about that. America's Next Top Podcaster.com is the website for that. So keep an eye out for that. Excellent. I think that's it. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.